Pushkin.
Did you know some travel credit cards offer 10 times points on your spending? Don't miss out on big rewards for your next trip. NerdWallet lets you compare smart travel credit cards side by side, curated by an expert team of finance nerds. What could future you do with better travel rewards? A free flight? A room upgrade? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G-connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Bizzle Pluma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
It is intoxicating. You open up your phone and it's like, quote tweet, this guy's awesome, quote tweet, this is awesome, quote tweet, this is awesome. Everybody that you respect, admire, can participate in lifting you up and saying you're awesome.
Hasan Minhaj was hearing a lot of positive feedback after one of his comedy routines went viral a few years back. You may know Hasan from The Daily Show or his Netflix series, Patriot Act. At the time, Hasan relished his increasing popularity. But in our conversation, he revealed a desire to move beyond a career that's so dependent on whether or not people like him.
Do you like me? How many millions of people like me so I can hopefully continue doing this? Man, I don't want to participate.
On today's episode, what happens when our self-worth and livelihood rely on how much people like us? I'm Maya Shunker, and this is A Slight Change of Plans, a show about who we are and who we become in the face of a big change. Hasan's brand of comedy is overtly political and often provocative. In his Netflix show, Patriot Act, he took on powerful world leaders like the Saudi Crown Prince and the President of China. You might also remember his speech at the White House Correspondents' Dinner back in 2017 when Trump was president.
The leader of our country is not here. And that's because he lives in Moscow. It is a very long flight. It'd be hard for Vlad to make it. Vlad can't just make it on a Saturday. It's a Saturday. As for the other guy, I think he's in Pennsylvania because he can't take a joke.
Hasan was initially drawn to comedy because it allowed him to hold people in power accountable. He's always liked playing the role of jester, an identity he talks about in his Netflix special, The King's Jester. It's a role Hasan began playing back when he was in elementary school.
Comedians sometimes identify and they see the world as this thing where there's people in the front of the class and then there's people in the back of the class. Mm-hmm. And there is a divide between those people. So there kind of is the people in the front of the class that uphold the status quo, that are like goody-goody students, type A, high achieving, whatever the teacher tells me to do, that's like the Old Testament and I take it as this is the Holy
Stop
Scripture.
Stop describing my life a seven-year-old.
Yeah.
Jesus, Hassan.
Then there's, I know, I'm so sorry, as I'm like looking you directly in the eye, I'm like, there's a particular type of person that's
yeah,
like this.
Yeah, a person who, I don't know, makes up extra credit projects when they don't even exist.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And then there's people in the back of the room that's like, this is kind of insane. They kind of understand the cosmic joke, so to speak. Mrs. Ledington does not have all the answers. Mr. DeMarco, the gym teacher, does not have all the answers.
Totally.
And for him or her to be decreeing this to us is absolutely ridiculous. So they're, you know, shooting spitballs from the back of the class. And I definitely felt growing up that I was outside of the core group of 30 kids and I'm observing this thing.
Mm.
So there was this feeling where I always felt like I was the DVD commentary to the story that was happening in real time, where I'm like, whoa, that's kind of weird that Andrew does this and Brittany does this. And I was able to kind of piece those things together. And those moments where I would sometimes be a smart aleck in class or growing up, it felt like all the code lined up in that moment. The Tetris of my comedy logic lined up perfectly. And just for a moment, I kind of felt a sense of agency.
Is there a memory you have of a time when you felt like, oh, I got a knack for this. Like, I'm pretty talented at it.
I was in the third grade in 1993. I'll never forget this. Miss Anderson was my teacher of the third, fourth grade combo. She loved Diet Pepsi. This was during an era in the 90s where, like, a lot of adults would just not drink water, but they would pound 80 plus ounces of these big gulp Diet Pepsis and being
like, because they were told there's no consequences,
there's no
right?
consequences.
This is just like water.
It's just like water. Who needs water?
Yeah.
But kids couldn't drink it. This was also during an era where kids could not have soda pop, right? It was a bad thing. And I remember she would sometimes have a case, like a 12-pack case on her desk. And I would just observe her being like, yo, she is shotgunning Diet Pepsi throughout the day. And nobody seems to think this is weird. And I remember one day I go, Miss Anderson, can I get a Diet Pepsi? And she's like, kids can't drink soda pop. I go, okay, Miss Anderson. And then my dad loved watching 60 Minutes. And I remember there was this big investigative report on 60 Minutes about how diet soda causes cancer. And I go, oh my God, she's like shotgunning, you know, cancer juice. And I remember the next day I went in to class and I go, hey, Miss Anderson, can I get a Diet Pepsi? And she goes, Hassan, children cannot drink soda. And I go, you're right, Miss Anderson. Only adults should get cancer. And I got in such big trouble. She like wrote it down and I got a pink slip and it was a whole thing.
Did the other kids in class laugh when you said that?
No, they didn't laugh because they didn't understand that I had seen the report.
But you felt this is interesting, right? Because you did not get any social validation in that moment that you were funny. But I had asked you, tell me about a time you realized that you were funny and you're naming this moment, which means there was some confidence there that you knew you had landed this joke, that it was objectively funny.
Yeah, it's very funny. I was thinking about this too, where there's kind of this duality that I think comedians inhabit, where on one hand, you're like, I'm the shit. I deserve to be on stage and people should listen to what I have to say. My opinions are probably the most important in this entire room. But there's also this extreme lack of self-confidence of like, I'm pretty worthless. I'm not shit. And it's that duality. It's the arrogance and this complete lack of any self-esteem that you vacillate between that kind of allows you to be a comedian, because I think our Hippocratic oath for comics is I ain't shit and neither are you. So you have to start by interrogating yourself, and then that gives you license to be able to be like, and you ain't shit either.
Mm. So after many years, let's fast forward a bit, after many years of hustling, your big dreams start coming true. You get a job as a correspondent on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, which I imagine is just one of those like mind-blowing moments of like, holy crap, I cannot believe this is coming to fruition.
Yeah, it was the first time in my life I felt like I was chosen. And it really meant a lot to me. And it felt like making an entertainment, it's very competitive and it's not guaranteed. And there's so many people that I know that are super funny that just never make it. And they never just get quote unquote chosen. So it was one of those things where it felt very validating that, man, this thing I devoted my life to, at that point it was 10 years, 1 month and 9 days, that it was for something.
And, you know, the show's known for blending comedy and political activism, mm-hmm. right? I'm wondering if there's a memorable segment that you worked on in which you felt, maybe for the first time, the power of marrying comedy and political activism.
Oh, yeah. I think it's that perfect combination of silly and sincere. That's the perfect combo for me. So I remember I was at The Daily Show, and it was during the 2016 election. This is one of my favorite pieces. And what's great about The Daily Show is you get to do it live from the conventions. And at that time, this was right, you know, peak Donald Trump, Mexicans are rapists, Muslim ban moment, right? And so one of the things that you get to do at the convention is you get to meet delegates from every state. They're walking around. And so the segment I pitched was called Hassan's Farewell Tour, where I get to go up to people and I go, hey, I'm Hassan Minhaj. Where are you from? And, they go, ah, hi, I'm a delegate from Montana. I go, oh, my God, I've always wanted to go to Montana. What's Montana like? Well, it's Big Sky Country. We can't wait for you to check it out. And I go, I can't. And they go, why? And I go, because the person you're voting for wants to ban me from the country. You know, and then it's like, phoom, Hassan's Farewell Tour. And it's a montage like that.
What's the best thing about Wisconsin?
The Green Bay Packers.
In Georgia, we have great whitewater rafting.
I would love to go whitewater rafting. What's the best thing about Oklahoma?
The Oklahoma Center.
Wow, I would love to go there sometime.
You're always welcome to come.
I would love to come down and see a game.
Yes, come.
I can't.
Why?
I'm a Muslim. And if Donald Trump is elected, he's probably going to throw me out.
As we cut together the package, it just got more and more ridiculous and funny. And then at the end, there was this really nice moment where someone was like, he's not going to do that. He doesn't mean that. And I go, really? And there'd sometimes be these older delegates. And they'd be like, I would never let that happen. I go, why not? And they go, because you're one of the good ones.
Oh,
and I go,
God.
You know what? I feel the same way about you. And we'd kind of like hug and embrace. And that to me is like the perfect cocktail. It's just the perfect cocktail of comedy. And I love it. Some people get mad. Some people feel righteous indignation. How could you say this? I don't care about any of that. The incongruity of all of this is fucking hilarious. That's what I find so funny.
After your time at The Daily Show,
yeah,
Netflix greenlights a show that you've created.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Patriot Act.
Yeah.
And I mean, this is the first time in your career where you were at the helm of a TV series. And for your first episode, you end up taking on a particularly risky topic.
Right.
Which is the Saudi crown prince.
Yeah.
And this is following the murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi, who was murdered at the Saudi consulate in Istanbul. And the story really blows up online.
Right.
And I'm curious if you can walk me through the decision-making calculus behind all this, and then we can talk about what happened after.
Yeah. So at that point in my life, the decision-making calculus always is chase the truth. In Hindi, there's this word called gudgudi, which means like a tickle in your tummy. And there's always, whenever I'm writing a joke or I'm working on something, there's always this like little tickle in my tummy of like, what if I said this? Kind of like that Miss Anderson moment. What if I said this in this moment? Chasing that, because that's a little bit out of your comfort zone. You're breaking what the status quo is. And the calculus that I had was, I know that every other show in late night right now does not know how to position themselves in relation to this subject. Like Stephen Colbert won't have the same angle I will be able to have here. And he won't be able to talk about being Muslim and having that relationship to Saudi Arabia as like an Indian, as an American, as a Muslim. He won't be able to triangulate that. So that's part of the math for me.
Just a few months ago, Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, aka MBS, was hailed as the reformer the Arab world needed. But the revelations about Khashoggi's killing have shattered that image. And it blows my mind that it took the killing of a Washington Post journalist for everyone to go, oh, I guess he's really not a reformer. Meanwhile, every Muslim person you know was like, yeah, no shit. He's the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia.
Well, Netflix under fire today after its decision to pull an episode of a comedy show that was critical of Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman and his alleged role in the killing of journalist Jamal Khashoggi.
So the episode gets banned in Saudi Arabia. It becomes a big international news story about tech platform censorship and what you can and can't say. I didn't know I'd be at the center of that.
You talk in the special about how intoxicating it was.
Oh, it feels great, yeah.
To get all of this attention,
yeah.
Right? To be trending on Twitter and all the likes, all the comments,
yeah.
All the retweets.
Likes, comments, retweets, give them to me! Everyone in the world cared about me for no particular reason!
Tell me more about what that experience was like on a psychological level, like being almost confronted with a new tier of attention.
Yeah, it is intoxicating. You feel like you're pretty drunk on it. You feel like you're the coolest kid in high school.
Yeah.
Like everybody's inviting you over to the blue benches and they're like, you're fucking awesome. And it feels like you're at a slot machine. You open up your phone and you just hit refresh and it's like, quote tweet, this guy's awesome, quote tweet, this is awesome, quote tweet, this is awesome. It's this crazy feeling where pre-social media, you had to do a lot to curry favor and validation from people. But this puts that on steroids because everyone around the world can participate in lifting you up and saying you're awesome. And the sick part of it is if you start to understand the rhythm of the algorithm, you can kind of break down how it works. You say something divisive, irreverent, bold, and you find someone, a point of your ire, and you go, okay, I'm going to target in on this person and I'm going to upload the video at 9 a.m. EST.
Yeah,
that way
yeah.
Everybody gets it first thing in the fucking morning and they pull out their phone and ooh, you let it rip all day long.
So you talked about the fact that at some point after working on these Patriot Act episodes, after getting recognized as one of Time's 100 most influential people in the world,
mm-hmm.
your wife, Bina, observes that you seem to only care about certain topics when, quote, the cameras are on.
Yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh.
Was that the first time that you began noticing just how much you were being driven by the attention and recognition? Like, was it in that moment with your wife?
Yeah. You know, Bina's always been kind of this Jiminy Cricket to me because she is one of the best people I've ever met in my life. And there's a reason why, like the moment I met her, I just remember being like, she's one of those people that is a good person, whether or not there's social clout or validation from it. She will do the right things privately. When she checks me on stuff, I really have to reckon with it.
I mean, you've said that you don't want to be doing the right thing for the wrong reasons.
Right.
What are the wrong reasons to do something?
Social signaling. You stand with Ukraine, you put up the black box, or you do the hashtag because everybody that morning is doing it and you want to be part of the in-group. The right reason to do it is, you know, this is in every ancient tradition or faith, right? You give with one hand without the other hand knowing. Like, you donate anonymously on GoFundMe.
This is so interesting, Hassan, because I think there are other comedians that would just hold themselves to a different standard. They would think, look, the right reason is just being desirous of making people laugh and engaging mm-hmm. them. And so the fact that you're even asking yourself these types of questions shows me that you do identify as more than just a comedian.
I want to be the best artist I can be, which requires honesty. And I just want to be a good person. And by good, I mean the people that know me the most can testify and be like, he's a good dude. He is ethical. He is sincere. He is a person of his word. Like all of those things. And the people that can validate that are my wife, my two kids, the crew that I grew up with, my sister, my parents. All those people can really vouch for that. The thing that I'm noticing is that there are quote unquote good guys and good gals vis-a-vis what they say on Twitter. But they ain't shit outside of that. And I think that's the social grift we're all observing.
We'll be back in a moment with a slight change of plans. Should you send that email you wrote while you were mad? Probably not. Probiotics can't help with all of your gut decisions. But if your gut needs a little support, Ritual has your back. Food choices, stress, or travel can throw off your gut health. That's where Ritual comes in. They made a 3-in-1 supplement called Symbiotic Plus with clinically studied prebiotics, probiotics, and a postbiotic to support a balanced gut microbiome. I make sure to take my Symbiotic Plus every morning, and I always appreciate that it's in a single minty capsule. Ritual prioritizes sustainably sourced ingredients and lower carbon packaging for its products, which is another reason I feel good about taking Symbiotic Plus. There's no more shame in your gut game. Symbiotic Plus and Ritual are here to celebrate, not hide your insides. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/slight. Start Ritual or add Symbiotic Plus to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/slight for 25% off.
As listeners to this show, you probably consider yourself pretty smart. But how smart is your wallet? When you're looking to upgrade your wallet, it's time to turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds has the financial smarts to help you find the right financial products for you. Before NerdWallet, you might have paid for vacations with whatever was in your wallet, but you could have been missing out on miles you didn't even know you were leaving on the table. Now you can get a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade? Lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet. Finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
We're back with comedian Hasan Minhaj. Hasan says he's eager to do things for the right reasons, rather than for social clout or validation. But I wanted to push him a bit on this desire for pure intentions. It seemed like he was holding himself to a pretty high standard, and I wondered whether the focus on purity might actually prevent him from doing social good. I think one challenge I have around assigning so much importance to the purity of our motives is that I want to make sure that we're being reasonable with ourselves about what's possible to accomplish. And I say this only because, okay, here's a hypothetical. Let's say that you, Hasan, have brought light to the fact that there is an innocent person sitting in a jail somewhere in the world.
Yeah.
And as a result of your advocacy, a result of the fact that you shed light on this,
right,
that person is free.
Yes.
But then I, Maya, the mad cognitive scientist, have created this machine, what's called a hypothetical, how pure is this dude really, MRI machine.
Sure,
okay, I put you in the scanner.
Yeah.
And like, we get some pretty troubling news. So we find out, hey, actually, 70% of Hasan's brain, you know, shine a light on this piece of information because he wanted a popular story on Instagram. But 30% of him cared about the person.
Yeah.
And, okay, I might think that's not great. I would prefer if Hasan got to 100% in terms of his motives, but I would never have wanted that, quote, impurity to curb your behaviors because the behavior is net positive.
But this is just a personal journey for me, Maya. For me, you know, especially because the internet has now made the world the quad at Davis High. Like, everybody is now in the quad, and it's lunchtime, and the popular kids and the jock, everybody's there. Now it's 8 billion people that are in this quad at lunch. So the reason why I have to check my motives is because it's becoming harder than ever to find out why you're doing something. And the thing for me is, if I can lock in on what the truth is in my heart, selfishly, it'll make me a better artist. I don't want to disappoint myself. And if I can hold myself to that standard, at least that I'm trying, then I can also be braver and more vigilant in my art. Because as an individual, I am seeking capital T truth, not consensus.
And I wonder whether your aspiration to try your hardest to do the right thing for the right reasons is in some way a stabilization exercise. It's grounding you in a sturdier place where, because you feel so firmly in your own convictions and you have that inner belief, in some sense, it kind of insulates you from that noise that's happening on the outside. Because you're like, you know what? I'm not as vulnerable as you think anymore because I know I put up this episode for the right reason. I know I made this joke because I actually wanted to help this person.
Yeah.
So if you think it's lame or you think it's stupid or you think that I'm blah or this or that, like I'm a little bit more impenetrable than I was before.
Correct. Yes.
Okay.
100%. So this is why I have to use this mental exercise to be like, I got to know who I am.
Because otherwise, I'm now relying on everyone else to tell me who I am all the time. And that's just too disorienting.
And I can't live that way.
Yeah, it's too fragile.
Yeah.
It's too fragile a position to be in. I completely understand that.
Yeah.
What you're saying is for you to have a sustainable career, for you to feel like you can actually create the best art and create armor around yourself, because it's only going to get, sorry, I just feel cynical about the future, but it's only going to get worse. It's only going to get nastier.
Yep.
There's going to be more vehicles by which people are going to be able to troll you and take you down and shake your self-confidence. And so it feels very wise to me that you're trying to put in that work now to create the only version of armor really that exists today, which is a sense of who you are and the reasons why you're doing the things you're doing.
You know, when the special premiered, I did this event for Netflix employees. So they screened it at the Netflix offices, the King's Jester, and then afterwards we did a Q&A with the staff. One of the employees at Netflix goes, "Hey, Hassan, we all know that you did comedy, much to the chagrin of your parents. If your daughter wants to do comedy, will you let her?" I go, "Nah." Here's why I'm genuinely afraid and I don't want my daughter to do comedy. I don't want my daughter to participate in an art form that is reliant on whether or not people like her. Like, from the moment she gets on stage at that first open mic in front of 10 people at the Brainwash Cafe in San Francisco, the whole subtext of that interaction will be, "Do you guys like me?" To the moment she auditions for her first improv team, "Do you like me?" Hopefully she advances and she auditions for SNL. "Lauren, SNL, do you like me?" Now she has a career. Now she's doing that at scale. "Do you guys like me?" Oh, she has a pilot and it goes to air. "Do you like me? How many millions of people like me so I can hopefully continue doing this?" Man, I don't want to participate in this business that's entirely dependent on whether or not people like me. This episode comes out. People are going to tweet, "I didn't like him. I didn't like that episode."
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you had this in your community growing up. There was always that one kid that got into Stanford.
Yeah.
Or that one kid that got into MIT. So in our community, it was Nikhil Sachdev, and I still believe this. People are like, "Are you happy with your life?" I go, "If I could go back in time, I would cut my own finger off to be Nikhil Sachdev." I'm not lying, Maya.
No,
I've hosted the White House Correspondents' Dinner.
Yeah.
I'm doing pretty well. I would do anything to trade places with Nikhil Sachdev.
Why do you value that more?
Well, because what's beautiful about Nikhil, and it's funny, I'm still very good friends with Nikhil, is he has created a line of work where his self-worth is not linked to whether or not people like him. He works in like investment banking. You can't go after him on Twitter. You can't say he fell off. He can walk through the grocery store and with his partner or his lover and no one's going to take a photo of him and be like, "Whoa, Nick's getting old." There is no thing like that. He is truly free. He's free from all this, Maya.
It's interesting because, like you said, he's not really beholden to anyone, right? His worth doesn't come from other people's approval or whether they find him funny or charming or whatnot.
This is why Nikhil Sachdev won. He's not playing a game that's predicated on whether or not people like him.
So how do you work with that? Because, you know, it's one thing to make a resolution to yourself to say, "Look, I want to not care what other people think. I want to be proud of the stuff that I do. I want to bring the purest motives and intentions." But it's not like overnight you're like, "Okay, made that resolution, brain transplant, you know, accomplished. Now I'm a new person and I've rid myself of all personal ambition and the desire to be loved and the desire to be liked and whatnot."
Mm-hmm.
Are there strategies that you're using to actively try and cultivate a more resilient mindset or a more pure approach to the work that you do?
Yeah, I think the ultimate way to defeat this thing, and it is the cosmic joke, I have to leave the game. Like, I gotta graduate from the game and move on to something else. I think this industry will drive you crazy. So for me, I think there's a world where I eventually move on from it and I transition to something else.
Yeah. And the thing you would transition to, it would have to meet the criteria where whatever the next thing I do is, I'm going to be able to establish my self-worth independently of other people's subjective assessment of me.
Totally. Being an artist is who I am. Yes. I do have this need to express myself, but I have to find new mediums as my life continues that are less and less and less attached to whether people like me or not. Maybe it's writing, maybe it's producing, maybe it's directing.
Behind the camera.
Yeah, but if you are to really go full kamikaze mission on this, then you actually have to leave the game and never come back.
No, it's such an honest take because I think a lot of people, and look, maybe the Buddhist monks are capable of this. They're like, yeah. I will transcend this shit. I will reach a state of enlightenment in which I do my best work. I'm an artist. I go up on stage. I do my stand-up routine. And I just don't care what the response is anymore. And
you're not.
To me,
you're
that
lying.
Feels like an impossible task because, look, part of the...
It's baked into the game.
It's baked into the calculus of being a good comedian to constantly be narrating in your own head and having this voice. Are people going to find this funny? Are they going to find this bit funnier than this bit? Are they going to think I'm a little bit too smarmy if I were to say this thing? Or are they think I'm a little bit too humble braggy if I do that? Right? Yeah. So that's such a hard tension to navigate.
Yeah.
Was there a moment of reckoning in even just the last year where you found yourself unhappy? You found yourself, despite having all the dreams that little Hassan had for himself, like you're sitting there and you're thinking, oh gosh, this is not... I'm not having the experience I should be having, given that I'm in this position.
I think there was a morning, I was getting some bad news. Something was happening. And my son is really cute. He's 2. He's like in peak cute.
Cuteness?
Yeah. He still smells really good. And he just wants to nuzzle and cuddle and all that stuff. And I'm holding him. And then I got my phone in one hand and I'm dealing with just like some bullshit that's attached to just this stupid Hollywood stuff. And I'm like, this is idiotic. Like, this game I'm playing is so stupid. Mm. Because also the thing that I was dealing with was some, like, press perception BS thing. It'd be one thing if I was, like, cuddling my son and I'm dealing with, like, notes about the set or there's something productive that's about, again, like what I'm talking about, seeking truth. It was this just, like, ego, clout, PR, some email thing. Someone said this about the special. Do you have a comment? Some, like, idiotic thing.
What's your response to the critic?
You spent 2 years of your life writing, performing, crafting this thing. This person has a response to your thing. Do you have a response to their response? I'm like, what are we doing? What on earth am I doing? I'm gonna miss these amazing moments with him for this. You know, I can't continue to be a part of this.
I mean, the reason I love that you're saying this right now is that these are the kind of reflections people have when they're at the lowest part of their careers. It's how they find ways to rationalize the lack of success or the great fall from atop. They say, you know, none of this stuff mattered anyway. I mean, what is fame? It's a flimsy thing. It's a transient thing. It was just based on, you know, whether other people like you. And I feel like I see it more as a retroactive rationalization of no longer being at the summit. And so what means a lot to me right now is that you are at the proverbial summit. Maybe you'll go higher, Hassan, but you're at the highest point you've been at relative to the rest of your career.
Sure. Yeah.
And you're standing there and you're still able to see the cosmic joke in it all. You're still able to see with some perspective how harmful, how pernicious, how destabilizing. Like, we're all so vulnerable to the perils of this game.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I could kind of feel like, this can't sustain itself. I'm getting older. I'm getting grays in the beard. It's fine. It's okay. Just keep it moving and continue to find ways to express yourself and be honest in your art. But you only win by leaving the game. And again, I think that is actually the true comic understands the joke of it all. That would be the most comedian thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, thanks so much for listening. Join me next week when I talk to Vanessa Bonds, a social psychologist and author of the book, You Have More Influence Than You Think. Vanessa's on a mission to make us more mindful of all the ways we already exert influence, often without realizing it.
It's not just the times that we're up in the front of the room. It's not just the times we're actively trying to persuade someone. It's also the times we just make a throwaway comment and suddenly that changes the way someone feels about something. You know, it's just our mere presence in a room that changes, you know, how people talk about a particular topic.
A Slight Change of Plans is created, written, and executive produced by me, Maya Shunker. The Slight Change family includes our showrunner, Tyler Green, our senior editor, Kate Parkinson Morgan, our sound engineer, Andrew Vestola, and our associate producer, Sarah McRae. Luis Guerra wrote our delightful theme song, and Ginger Smith helped arrange the vocals. A Slight Change of Plans is a production of Pushkin Industries, so big thanks to everyone there. And of course, a very special thanks to Jimmy Lee. You can follow A Slight Change of Plans on Instagram at Dr. Maya Shunker.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Puma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.